Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein. This is Perek of Zion of Sefer Yechezkel, chapter 27 of the book of Yechezkel, a continuation, it's a separate incident, but a continuation of our dealings with Sor. So here, Vayidvar Hashem Elai Le'emor, V'atav en Adam Sa'al Tzor Kina. Hashem tells Yechezkel to, as the JPS English has it, intone a dirge over Tzor. Right, to make a kina over Tzor. So we saw in the last parak that Tzor were, in some sense, the competition for the Jewish people in terms of presenting worldviews. So the idea that we have to, and therefore their downfall was predicted, the idea that Yechezkel is being asked and told to make a kina over Tzor reminds us first that it's never true that Hashem wants anybody's destruction, even those whose actions have merited it. That's true both of Jews and of non-Jews. So here, the mourning over Tzor is that Tzor could have learned, ideally, its proper place in the world and its proper interactions with the Jewish people and all those kinds of things, and that it didn't, and therefore has incurred this punishment as a source of distress, as it were, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But aside from that, it feeds into an interesting Medrash Tanchum, or it's cited by an interesting Medrash Tanchum in the beginning of Balak. There is a strand of Midrash that claims that Balak was, that Bil'am was a prophet really of the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's an interesting strand of Midrash. It's based on the pasuk at the end of Moshe's life, which says, Lo kam Yisrael od kim Moshe. So the pasuk says, Be Yisrael among the Jewish people. And the Midrash says, among the Jewish people, they never had a prophet like that. But the non-Jews had a prophet like that, and they point to Bil'am. And the reason that's given for that necessity, or for having such a prophet, and for the importance of having such a prophet, is that Hashem doesn't want the non-Jews to be able to say, well, if we only had leadership like them, or opportunities like the Jews, we would have been like them as well. So therefore, the Medrash goes through a whole list of things. So kings, and prophets, and all of those kinds of things. Right? And lo od, the Medrash says, Ela kol ha-nevi'im hayu b'midat rachim al Yisrael ve'al umot ha'olam. That all the prophets had concern and care, not only for Jews, but also for the non-Jewish nations. So Yeshayahu they quote, and I think Yirmiyahu is quoted in there, and Yechezkel omer ben adam sa'al tzor kina. So that what he's being told is, and the comparison is, that the prophets of the non-Jewish world, such as Bil'am, try to destroy us for no good reason. So that's the contrast, that they were given the same opportunities as us and misused them, and used them in the exact opposite ways from how a Jewish Navi would have done so. So that's the point, that's the underlying agenda, I guess you'd say, of that Midrash. But but part of the point, I think, of that is to show that Yechezkel was being told that he needs to have actual honest upset and sadness over Tzor. So the downfall of Tzor, which is, as we're going to see, the center of commerce, or was a center of commerce for that time, its downfall is a distressing situation. And so when Hashem comes to say, Sa'al Tzor Kina, the point is that we need to be sad about it, even though Tzor deserved it. V'amar tel Tzor, so this is what you should say. Hayoshev el amavot yam, rochelet ha'amim el iyim rabim, kol amar Hashem elokim, Tzor at amart ani keli lat yofi. So Hashem opens up by saying this was the city. This was the city that saw itself as, in important senses, the center of the world. So Rashi says, "Mevo'ot hayam," it was the port where the ships would come there, and they would come all the way right up to the wall. So there are a lot of cities where they're not so close to the water that they can do that. So Tzor was extremely convenient because your shipping lane could come right into town. Something like, I live in New York City, and we certainly have ports like that in New York City. And therefore, as Rochelet Amim, Rashi portrays it as it was like a middleman for all the nations, that its rules were, there was a northern port and a southern port, and the ships from the north would stop in at the northern port, and they would unload, offload their merchandise, and then the city of Tzor would be the middlemen, and they would transport it to the southern port, and the southern port ships, etc. So you couldn't have direct. So they were the middlemen in the commerce, and therefore they were essential to the flow of commerce. That's Rochel and Amim Eliyim Rabim. All of the nations along the coast would come to her, and this is what Hashem says to Tzor: "You've said Ani Kalila Yolfi. You've said to me. You've said your picture was I am the essence of beauty. So that in and of itself is something that I could have imagined being offensive, that it's being so taken with itself would be something that would lead to it being punished or at least rebuked or admonished. But Rashi puts it into a fuller context in that Rashi says it's not only that they did it, but that until now people said that about Yerushalayim. Ad achshav kolomim al Yerushalayim kli la'yofi. And now you're trying to say, no, I'm the kli la'yofi. I'm the essence of beauty, and therefore that's going to be a problem for Tzor, and we're upset, we're sad for Tzor that they did that. B'lev yamim givulayich bonayich kalelu yofyech. And you were built, your borders, you know, are on the high seas, right? It's right out in the sea. That's part of what's so important about Tzor. And your builders have made you the most beautiful, have really improved your beauty. How they do that? B'roshim misenir banulach eikol luchotayim erez milvanon lakachu lasot toren alayich. So Rashi points out that because it's built in the sea, or right on the sea, and has good ports and all of that aspect to its building, so when the Navi, when the Nevuah, when the prophecy is coming to the Navi and he's trying to make a point about how it's going to be destroyed, or its beauty at this point, and that it's going to be destroyed, he uses the metaphor of a ship, that they put too much weight on it, and therefore it sank through a strong eastern wind. So the comparisons are going to be, meaning the point of all of these psukim is going to be, it was built in the most beautiful way by gathering materials from all the best places. So b'roshim misnir banulach et kol luchotayim, the planks of the ship. So in Tzor it wasn't actually a ship, but the metaphor is the planks of your ship were made of cypress trees from Sinir, and then they brought cedar trees from Lebanon. These are the best woods for the various purposes to which they're being used, and they used to make a toren, a mast, to make the tall pole that will, in the middle of the ship, that leads the ship, or that is sort of the flagpole for the ship, the mast for the ship. Alonim b'bashan asum pasuk vav. Alonim b'bashan asum mishotayich karshech asu shein bat asherim iyei chitiyim. So they took oak trees from Bashan to make the oars to row the ship, and then they took from Kitim. So Rashi says this isn't true. They took the rudder, right? It's Karshech Asu Shein. I'm sorry, hold on one second. Yeah, Rashi understands Karshech. The JPS English says Karshech means your decks. But Rashi understands Karshech to mean, he says, who is Hu HaKeresh HaRachav Shebirosh HaSheni Shal HaSfina Asher Bo Mehapchim Et HaSfina Lechol Tzdadeha. The Ramach of El Ochezbos. Rashi at least seems to understand the Karshech to mean the rudder, right? The thing that turns the ship. And then he says, and he's bothered because it said it's inlaid with ivory. And Rashi says it can't be inlaid with ivory, it has to be wood. So he says, no, they meant it as a mashal that it was so beautiful and they made it so expensively as if it was covered over with ivory. The Radak sees it the other way, closer to the JPS. He says, no, you make a tall tower on the ship that you make usually from wood. On these, on the ships of Tzor, they would make them from ivory to be beautiful. And they would bring it from the islands of Kitim, which is where the elephants are, from the lands of Kitim where the elephants are. And that's why they call it Shein. And it's called Shein. That's why marble or ivory is called, I'm sorry, ivory, not marble. Why is ivory called Shein? It's called Shein because it comes from the teeth of elephants. So that's what we're talking about here. Pasuk Zayin Sheish Perigma Mitzrayim Hayam Ifraseich. So your sails were embroidered linen from Egypt. The Lachan Lanes, to be a sign for you to show off and to show who you are. The Chilat Vargaman Meiye Elisha Hayam Mechaseich. And then the coast of Elisha, they would take blue and purple for the coverings of the ship. The JPS thinks it's for the awnings of the ship. I would note that we have the JPS just says Tchelet Ragaman Ye Elisha, but the Targum Yonatan, the Radak points out, for Ye Elisha says we mean not Italia. So it's kind of interesting. I don't know whether Italy historically, whether Italy was in contact with Tzor at that time in Cheskel to do it. I think it's unlikely, but that's the way Targum Yonatan understood what was going on, where they were getting these materials from. Pasuk Chet, Yoshevei Tzidon ve'arvad ayu shatim lach, chachamayach tzor hayuvach himach hovelayach. So the inhabitants of Tzidon and Arvad, which are nearby, were the people who did the rowing. Chachamayach tzor hayuvach, your wise men, were the pilots of the ships, meaning the people of Tzor were too important to be the rowers. They were the skilled laborers. They were the ones who would lead the ship. And again, if we remember that this is all a metaphor for the city of Tyre, of Tzor, and how it worked, so it would mean, the point of this would be that first we're getting all the materials from all over, the best of everywhere is being sent here, is being imported. That implies wealth and the interest and the concern of other nations. They're willing to send their best stuff there. I mean, it might just be for a price, or it might be out of respect and admiration. And then, also, I mean, not only in terms of materials, but in terms of labor. You have laborers who are rowers, and they'll come to you, so you don't have to. You can outsource your rowing by importing immigrants who will do that kind of labor, and not have to do it yourself, right? And the Radak says that the point of Chachamayach Tzor Yubach, you had all the wise men you needed, that you needed from your own, and they would be the people who knew how to sail the ship, which was the complicated part of sailing, right? To catch the wind the right way. The rowing, anybody can do. That's a matter of brute strength. So the picture that is being drawn is that Tzor is a place which has all of the experts and all the expertise, and it can outsource all of the menial, simple tasks, and that's what it does. But Pasuk Ted, Zignei Gival v'chachameha yuvach machzikei bitkeich, kolinot hayam malachayam yuvach la'arov ma'aravech. So the elders of Gval and its craftsmen were there making various kinds of repairs. The same idea, right? So the Radak says on Ziknei Gval, and Rashi says also, they were the people who knew how to build. So when you had building issues, they would come and they would do your repairs. And their Uman Lachehem, their ship, their sailors, would also be there to help out and to do your merchandise for you. La Roma Ravech, Rashi thinks it just means in general to do those things that you need to do. I mean, they were your helpers, they were your assistants, they were your hired hands, they were your handymen, they were your whatever it is. You didn't do all of that labor. You had these people come in. And that's the picture that we're trying to draw here of Tzor. It was a city like that in which the original Tzorites, right, the real citizens, they didn't have to do any of this stuff because they had people coming that they could hire to do that, and they did all of the more skilled labor. Paras, velud, ufut, ayu, v'chilech, anshe milchamtech, magen, mekova, tiluvach, Himra Natnu Hadarech. So the people of Paras and Lud and Put, so they were your soldiers, right? They were, right, the Radak says, even war was something that the people of Tzor were outsourcing. They had faithful compatriots who they could hire for war purposes. That was their job. They were the muscle. Right, the people at Tzor were the brains. Then the Paras and Lud and Put, they were the muscle. They knew how to, they weren't the muscle of building. That was the people of Gval. They were the muscle of war. And so that's why they would bring their magain and their kova, their shields and their helmets, and they would hang them there. It would be a splendor for you, at least partially, because you didn't have to do it yourself. You didn't have to dirty your hands with going to war. You could just let other people do it too. Just like, if you can allow me to be political for just one moment in a way that I think is obvious, just like we in America today, we outsource our war to those Americans who are either poor enough or patriotic enough, they decide to put their lives on the line, and then we fight wars, and we don't have to ever worry about our own children having to be the ones who suffer through those wars. So here too in Tzor, you have the same kind of a thing. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Bnei Arvad v'cheleich al chamotayich saviv, v'gamadim b'migdolotayich hayu, shiltehem tilu al chamotayich saviv, hima kalalu yofe yech. So the people of Arvad and Cheleich, who were, meaning other nations living among you, and even people from Kapotka was another place, and Rashi says that they would go, they knew how deep the sea was in various places. They were like divers, and so that's why they were called Gamadim. So they're on your walls all around, and they're at your towers, and they're, they have all their arrows and their quivers, all of their instruments that they use for their various expertises. So they hang it around as well, right? So the Radak says these people are also war people. So some of them are warriors, some of them are divers as part of war, and so their shields and their tools are also hung around, and they're also part of your beauty that you have this cosmopolitan, metropolitan, international city supported by the polyglot, the great diversity and mix of talents and peoples in its midst. So this is what Tzor was. Pasuk Yibet, Tashish Sochar Teich, Merov Kol Hon, Bechesev Barzel Bedil Veoferet Natnu Izvoneich. So now Tarshish, which is an important trading city, and they trade with you. They chose you to trade with, and they bring merchandise to you, and that's also on the sea, and they're bringing it to you, and because they're so involved with you, they're called like the ones who are your merchandisers. They fuel your economy. So they're an important, what we would call today, a vital important trading partner, and they give you silver and iron and tin and lead for all the things you need. Yavan, Tuval, Vameshech, Hema, Rochlaich, and also Greece and Tuval and Meshech, all those cities, they also are merchants with you. Benefesh Adam, Uchlei Nechoshet, and they bring human traffic, meaning slaves, which was an important part of the trade in those days as well, and copper utensils, Natnuma Aravech, and they trade it with you. Ibeit Togarma, Susimu Farashimu Fardin, Natnuzmanech, and the people of Togarma, they were the sellers of horses, and so here Parashim, the Radak thinks it also means the kinds of horses, but they were horses that specifically were trained for war. The JPS just thinks it means no, Parashim, in his literal sense, people who knew how to ride those horses, and you could purchase those, much like we saw purchasing, having soldiers before, they would be like this, purchasing mercenaries. So the Radak also has that as another possibility, but the other one as well, and aside from the horses and the horsemen, or the horses and the war horses, Ufradim, and donkeys, or and mules, that knew Izvonech. B'nei Dedan Ruchlayech, and they also, the people of Dedan, were your trading partners. Iyim Rabim Schorat Yadech, Karnot Shein, V'havnim, Heshivu Eshkarech. So they trade with many of the, along the coast, and they bring you ivory and ebony. Havnim is ebony, and they return it to you. Have you eshkarech? Means they return it to you, perhaps the JPS thinks it is, they return it to you as like a tribute, like a tax, so they're paying taxes to you. So aside from what you're actually trading and what you're actually earning through merchandising, you're also getting tributes. Aram sochartech mirov ma'asayich benofech argaman v'rigmo v'utz v'ravot v'chad kod that nubi is v'naich. So Aram, because of all your wealth, they're also willing to trade with you, and they give you various kinds of colorings and colored garments. So Nofech, the JPS has turquoise, you have purple, you have embroidery, and fine linen, and then some stones and jewelry as well. Remote kind of code, coral and agate. Yehuda v'Eretz Yisrael himeroch layech, and this is obviously before the destruction of Israel, but the southern areas also do shopping with you and do merchandising with you. B'chitei minit ufana gudvash v'shemen v'tzarin anu ma'aravech, and they deal in food. So you have the wheat. You have wheat, a special kind of wheat. B'chitei minit, a special kind of wheat. Ufanag is another kind of a crop, and honey and oil and balm, and they give that. The mesek zechartech. It's interesting, just by the way, that at least in Yechezkel's portrayal, the things that Yehuda and Yisrael have are foodstuffs, rather than all these fancy, what we might call luxuries. Now, I don't know that that was necessarily always the way it was, and I'm not I don't want to build too much off of it. But I find it interesting that in the allocation of resources, so we often think that let's say Tzor is the city with great, great wealth because it has the wisdom, which is always an important thing to have, and it doesn't speak too much about Tzor's natural resources. When it comes listing all the various natural resources, so there's wood that you can build fine ships with, and there's ivory, and there's this, but the Jews are about food, which is an even more basic necessity than many of the other things that are in this list. Pasuk Yichet, Damesek Sochartech Berov Ma'asayich Merov Kolhon B'yein Chalbon V'tzemer Tzachar. So Damascus trades with you, again, because of all of your wealth, and they trade good wine and good wool. V'dan v'yavan me'uzal b'izvonayich natanu barzel asot kida v'kanem arma aravech haya. So V'dan, the JPS, thinks that it's the name of the place. It's not and dan. It's V'dan is the name of the place. V'dan v'yavan. But Yavan we've already seen. So v'yavan me'uzal. It's probably Yavan from Uzal. And they also trade with you. And they give you barzel asot kida and kaneh. And barzel and kida and kaneh, which is like a polished iron and other kinds of things. I mean, the JPS has it at cassia and calamus, whatever it is. I don't think the specifics are vital. Then in Pasuk Chav, didan rochaltech, v'vigdei chofesh l'richva, Didan, they sell you clothing for riding, even more specialized, right? Not clothing, clothing for riding. Arav v'chol nisiyei kedar, heima sochar yadech, b'charim ve'elim atudim bam socharayach. And they give you animals from Arabia, from Arav and Kedar, and they give you lambs, rams, and goats, right? Rochle shiva v'ramahim arochlayach b'rosh kol bosem v'chol evan yikarav v'zahav natnu izvonayach. They give what they contribute, the people of the merchants of Shiva and Ra'ama. They give you all kinds of spices, right, and precious stones and gold. That Charan v'chaneva eden rochle shiva ashur kilmad rochaltech. And then other places, Haran and Kane and Eden, who were part of the merchandising of Shiva and Asi, and then also Ashur and Kilmad, they also were trading with you. Hem rochleif machlulim biglomei techelet v'rigmao v'ginzei beromim b'chavalim chavushim v'arozim b'mar chul teich. So these were your merchants and all the things, and choice fabrics, and techelet, and the blues of techelet, and embroidered garments, and things that are tied up with cords and preserved and cedar and put into various barrels to make sure that they stay. And that's pretty much, I think, the end of the list of the various trading partners that Tzor had, right? And so I hope obviously the point of the list is to show how thoroughly embedded in the global economy, and we talk about it today as if it never happened before, but really that's the picture. So it wasn't global in the same sense of global, because they didn't know of as big a world as we know of, but in the sense of being part of what's going on around them, Tzor is being portrayed as being really the center where everybody has interactions with Tzor. So Oniyot Tarshish Sharotayich Ma'araveich, and then you're using the ships of Tarshish, because they didn't even have to necessarily build their own ships for all this trade. They would use Tarshish and they would do it Vatimali Vatikbidim Ma'od. You got very, very full, believe Yamim. You're so full. Now again, Rashi pointed out, this is back to the metaphor of the ship. In the metaphor of the ship, you're going to get so full, and in those days when a ship got too full, it could sink. It really happens today that a ship sinks because it gets too full, because we calculate these things well, so we have ships that sink for other reasons, but that's not the point of the metaphor anyway. It's that if you apply that to a city, cities can't get so full that they sink either. It's extremely difficult to make a city so heavy that it sinks into the ground. The point is that it's getting so heavy and so full of... So again, if I had to apply the metaphor, I would say it's getting so heavy and so full of itself and of its understanding of itself and of its sophistication and of its involvement in the world and of all of its greatnesses, that that's going to lead to it sinking under its own weight. And that's, I think, what we're going to see in the coming Pesukim. B'mayim rabim hevi'ucha shatimotach ruach hakadim shivarech b'lev yamim. And then your oarsmen, so remember the oarsmen were, we saw before, the oarsmen were coming from elsewhere. So they, Yoshvei Tzidon ve'arvad, were the ones who were the shatim. So the shatim are going to try to take you out into the mighty water. They're taking you out into the mighty waters where they shouldn't have taken you because it's going to be too heavy. And then there's going to be a ruach kadim, a strong east wind. Ruach kadim is going to break you among the seas. So the JPS, interesting, for ruach hakadim doesn't say from the east, it just says a tempest, as if Ruach HaKadim is a thing, and that thing is what's going to break you apart. Right, so I just pointed out that Rashi says when you brought them into the deep waters, that's because that was the general practice. When you had a big ship, it was heavily laden and had stuff, it's because it could sail in deep water. So it wasn't negligent on their part. That's what you expect to do with heavy ships. I would also point out that the Mechilta, the Rabbi Shmuel in Bishalach, which is on about Kriyas Yamsuf. So the Mechilta about Kriyas Yamsuf points out that often in Tanakh you see that when destruction is going to come from people who deserve punishment, you have this Ruach Kadim. And so there it says it about Kriyas Yamsuf that all night long Hashem made Ruach Kadim Azah Kol HaLaila. And then in the Dor HaMabul and the people of Sodom, it comes with Ruach Kadim Azah. And then the 10 Shvatim, it was Ruach Kadim, because the Pasuk says, Ruach Kadim Afitzeim, and here too, you have a Ruach HaKadim that's going to break it. So, question is, once you notice that fact, what's the point of that fact? So, I'm not sure. It could just be to say that Hashem likes to use wind, and then you'd have to go into the whole theology of what wind is. But it doesn't just say wind. It says wind or ruach hakadim. We think of ruach as here as wind, and then kadim we think of as east because that's the word that's used for it. But the JV is using it as tempest. It means ruach kadim is just a storm. But I also wonder whether ruach here, if you play on the word ruach, not just as storm, but also as spirit, and kadim not just as a direction, but as a reference to of old, if it might not be true that Ruach HaKadim that's going to come here, it may come from the east, but it may be that we envision or we metaphorically see the east as the source of origins, and that what's going on here is that the Ruach HaKadim, the spirit of the origins of the world is what's going to break them up, because again, Lev Yamim here doesn't mean literally a sea, because they're not literally a ship. It's in the seas of the life of the world. They, as they sail along, and they're a big ship, and they're heavily laden, so then the spirit of old comes back and points out that they are sailing the wrong way. And that's what's going to break them apart. I wonder. Pasuk of Zion, Honech v'izvonayich ma'araveich malachayich v'chovlayich ma'chazikei vidkeich v'orvei ma'araveich v'chol Hashem l'chamtech asher bach v'chol ke'alech asher b'tocheich yiplu b'lev yamin b'yom ma'baltech. All of your, of everything you had. Right? We've gone through this whole list of what they had and who brought it to them and how it was brought to them, and how involved they were in various things. So they got all of their materials from various places, right? So all of that, Yiplu B'lev Yamim. So interestingly, Yiplu B'lev Yamim, the Radak, it's funny that Rashi takes it as a metaphor, and the Radak seems to take it more seriously. The Radak says, after Nebuchadnezzar conquers the city, then all of a sudden there's a flood, and it literally floods the city. That's maybe related to the previous perek, where there was talk about the city being flooded and the Radak taking that seriously. So here too, he seems to take it seriously, but it doesn't have to be, right? If Rashi is right that it's a metaphor of Tzor as a ship, and then the breaking apart in the seas wouldn't have to be literal seas, but could be the seas of the life of the world, then what it means is that all the things, all of the wealth you accumulated, all of the populations who came to work with you, all of this, all of that, they will all be washed away by the world, and will go off to other parts of the world, like if you were in a literal sea, you'd be washed away, and you might be washed up, you know, hundreds of miles elsewhere. So that's what's going to happen here to all of these nations who were part of Tzor. So at the outcry of all of the people who are of your pilots, right? You're trying to navigate a ship the right way. If you are the captain and you see that your efforts are failing, so they're gonna cry out, and it's gonna make a lot of noise. It's gonna be a terrible cry. They're gonna flee the ship. They're gonna get out of the ship. The oarsmen, the seamen, the pilots, all of them are going to flee the ship and go on to the land. They're gonna cry out in bitterness, right? They're gonna put dirt on their heads as a sign of sadness. And they're gonna put ashes on themselves as a sign of mourning. They'll tear their hair, making bald patches. They'll wear sackcloth. And they'll cry, and they'll be upset over what happened to you. So, to keep in mind the metaphor, if we're talking about not an actual ship, we're talking about the city of Tzor, and the city of Tzor is having this fate happen to it. So it's interesting to watch that the peoples, many of whom were outsourced, so they weren't natives, right? The captains of the ships were natives. So you could have imagined somebody saying, I didn't really want to work for them. And so then when they hit their downfall, so these oarsmen and these rowers and these various employees would say, great, they got theirs, I'm going to go off do something else. But that's not the way it's being portrayed. So if we think of Tzor as a cosmopolitan city, the people who live there from other places and who do this relatively menial labor, do the lower jobs because that's what they're qualified to do, they don't mind their position. They're not upset that this is what they were. Now I'm free from being an oarsman. They're distressed. They're honestly distraught over the destruction of Tzor. And that's the way I think Yechezkel is portraying it. I put it in these terms because I think it's always striking how modern, if you just pay a little bit of attention, these terms are. So I try to do this sometimes with fiction. I have a book of fiction coming out sometime, hopefully later this summer, maybe by the time you hear this. I mentioned it before. I won't belabor the point. But just listen to this and then turn that into almost many, many other cities where you have lots and lots of international workers who come there and who move there because the economy is good and they can make a good living and they bring their specific talents that the natives of that city don't necessarily want to do or aren't involved in, and the city becomes a cosmopolitan city, and this and this and this. It's very similar to what's going on here with Tsar, and there's no bitterness, it's not upset, it's not being done by force of power, it's being done by force of the influence you wield by being an advanced society. So when that, if it were to be true that that society breaks apart because the spirit of old says this is not the way a society is supposed to go, should such a thing happen, the people in that city who are caught up in that would be extremely upset. Whether they were natives or not, they would be extremely upset over what happened. Not only would they be upset, but in Pasuk Lamed Bet, let's keep going, V'nasu elayich b'nihem kina, V'kanu elayich, and they're going to be upset, and they're going to make elegies, they're going to make sad songs about what's happened. Michet Tzor k'duma b'toch hayam. Who was like Tzor when she was there in the middle of the sea? B'tzitiz v'nayich miyamim, his ba'at amim rabim. When you used to have all your ships going out to the seas, you used to satisfy many nations. So again, as part of being a part of the global economy, other people really gain and profit from them. It's not a tyranny of Tzor as a leading city. It's Tzor as a leading city, and the whole world benefits from it. So now its destruction is very upsetting. The kings of all the nations were enriched by you. And then, when you fell apart and you were sunk in the depths of the sea, and your merchandise and your crew were all aboard, all of the inhabitants of the various coastlands were upset about you, were desolate about what happened. And the kings of the other nations are going to be upset. They're going to tear at their hair. Their faces will be all upset. So and the merchants of other nations are going to be upset. Meaning, when Yerushalayim was destroyed, we saw Tzor was celebrating and said, now I'll take their place. You might have imagined the other merchants would do that, but it's not true. It's not what happens. The other merchants are whistling or upset and are all about a hotayid. They look at you and they're horrified by it. And you're not going to be, you're going to stop forever from being a relevant force and a relevant power. So that's a fascinating kina over Tzor. And the kina over Tzor demonstrates to us that the destruction, first of all, it's a destruction that doesn't necessarily have to be so immediate and so obvious and so tragic in its in the exact way that it happened. It's the downfall of Tzor that's upsetting, and it's the downfall that shows that Tzor is a city with large connections or broad connections around it, and that everybody else is affected by it as well, and that's part of the tragedy of Tzor, over which Yechezkel was told to be Nosei Kina. Have a great day.